This podcast is part of the Rots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Wizarding World Lorecast. Join us as we take a deep dive into the lore of the fantastical world of the Harry Potter universe. Welcome back, witches and wizards, to another episode of the Wizarding World Lorecast. I am one of your hosts, Ben of Temeria, followed by my good friend and co-host, Nina.
What's up?
And yes, Nina, you couldn't hear the music because of how I had to set up my mic for today's episode.
It was just like
it was crackling.
Oh. It was oddly quiet for too long. I'm like, I hope this didn't freeze.
Oh, I know. I did the same thing with Toasty. And he was like, I couldn't hear anything. What happened? And I was like, oh, it's fine. It's just because how I have it set up on Zoom. It's all good. Yeah, it's everybody, it records it in the background. And people, anybody watching live on Twitch hears it too. So it's all good. It's fine.
That's what's important. I get the cues. Everything's fine.
Exactly. So this week we are still diving into the different shops of Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade, and today we are both of these are in Hogsmeade again. We are going over the Shrieking Shack and Madame Puttyfoot's tea shop.
Puttyfoot.
Yeah, Puttyfoot.
Take your word for it.
I think.
All right.
Let's go with that. So, kick things off. We are going over the Shrinking Shack first. So, the Shrinking Shack was an abandoned house in Hogsmeade. For many years, the villagers thought it was a haunted house because they often heard screams coming from inside. And Albus Dumbledore encouraged the rumors, as he was the one who commissioned it due to being... due to Remus Lupin's lycanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is, this shack is not, in fact, haunted at all, which we see in the book and in the films of Prisoner of Azkaban, and even in the book of, I think it's Deathly Hallows, I think it reprised again, I believe, which we'll go in a little bit more later. So the Death Eaters use it for a little bit.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
And then, according to Nearly Headless Nick, not even the Hogwarts ghosts would enter it. The Shrieking Shack's entrance for the Hogwarts grounds was the base of the Whomping Willow. The trick was to poke the knot of the trunk, which paralyzed the tree, and the secret passageway could be seen from the Marauder's map. I wonder why it could be seen by the Marauder's map. Maybe because Lupin was one of the, you know, creators of said map.
Yeah, it might be a good idea for the others to have an eye on him where he's at, especially during that time of the month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, getting into the history of the Shrieking Shack. So, in reality, the Shrieking Shack was only used so that Remus Lupin would have a place for his monthly transformations into a werewolf in secret and safety during the time he was a student attending Hogwarts. Madame Pomfrey used to escort Lupin into the Shrieking Shack before his transformation. The yells and shouts heard by the villagers were really Lupin biting and scratching himself due to the lack of humans to infect.
To be honest, as a woman, if I had a place to go once a month just to scream, I feel that.
Yeah.
I think every woman needs a Shrieking Shack just to go in there and scream once a month. You know.
I'm not going to comment on any of this whatsoever.
Smart move. Any woman listening should get it.
Anyway, the shack, quote unquote, actually had no working doors or windows that allowed entry or exit to the premises. The entrance was only through a tunnel under the Whomping Willow on Hogwarts school grounds. This allowed Remus Lupin and James Potter, Pettigrew, and Sirius Black to pass between the two locations unnoticed as animagi or werewolf. Mm-hmm. And yes, James, Peter, and Sirius are all animagus. Obviously, we see Peter and Sirius transform into their animagus forms in the films and the books. Mm-hmm. James, we only get mentioned of, and he is Well, you do get to see his animagus form because it's the form of Harry's Patronus.
Yeah, you get the idea of what it is.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then one year, Sirius thought it would be funny to lure his arch-nemesis, Severus Snape, to the shack where Lupin was due to his monthly transformation in order to eliminate Snape from spying on them. James saved Sirius in time, but not before Snape witnessed what Lupin was, though he was forbidden from telling anyone.
Probably not the best idea in hindsight in Sirius's part.
No, God no, because then he just created a whole giant mess right there.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably would have Lupin as a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher more than for 1 year.
It's true.
Because it was all Cerberus's fault.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But then we get to the 1990s. So this is all of the events that happens through Hogwarts Mystery. So during the 1990-1991 school year, Corey Hayden was kidnapped by Mordora last night because they and Jacob's sibling wouldn't stop poking around about R and the director. So she took Corey unconscious to the Shrieking Shack shortly after Jacob's sibling was teleported by a portkey to the Whomping Willow, where Mordora was waiting, who guided them at one point towards the Shrieking Shack, where the director formally introduced herself to Jacob's sibling and revealed her true name as Veruca Buckthorn Snide, as well as revealing to be Marula's aunt.
Hmm.
Yeah. Things get a pretty family drama in Hogwarts Mystery pretty quick. I mean, that's all your entire character arc is you literally finding what happened to your brother.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Yeah. On top of other family matters from other characters.
What we went over in, I think it was a previous episode, we found out that his family is not very good.
No, Jake's absolutely not. Your character's family that you make in Hogwarts Mystery is not a good family.
Mm-mm. A lot of drama.
I'm the goody two-shoes Gryffindor, and then when I was reading all this stuff, and I haven't gotten to that point in the game because it takes so freaking long to go through the game,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, huh, well, at least I'm Gryffindor. At least I'm doing the good stuff.
I see that silver lining.
Right. And then Racuna explained to Jacob's sibling that R planned everything to get them to this point, including using Patricia Radpick, Estance Burke, and Kushiro Shiratori as pawns to get them to make contact, while having Manuela Stein make Jacob's sibling willingly join R and eventually lead them. How about no? I don't want to. Racuna also stated that it was the destiny of the Jacob sibling to become their leader, who, however, stated that they would never join R after they had done, but they were at this very moment, Peregrine, the father of Jacob's sibling, came out of the shadows, revealing himself to be the leader of R, much to the surprise of Jacob's sibling.
There it is.
Yep.
There's the big mic drop right there.
Boom. Stabbed in the back. Your father's an evil person.
Very evil person.
I almost said a different word, but anyway. downstairs in the Shrieking Shack, Peregrine had a private conversation with your child in which they told him about his occupation and time with R, and that R was not an evil organization as they believed, but they were benevolent, who opposed the corrupted British Ministry of Magic and sought knowledge, truth, and justice. Upstairs, Corey Hayden awoke after being unconscious, and he and Jacob's sibling departed after bidding farewell to Peregrine.
Hmm.
Later, Peregrine and Vicona had Jacob wear the crown of Menem, and take Dai Rusaki's mind-enhancing potion to demonstrate the mind control of the Shrieking Shack. Before the demonstration, their younger child, Marinola, and either Penny Haywood, Barnaby Lee, or Talbot Winger attempted to distract him and to take the amulet, but he outsmarted them and paralyzed his younger child's friend with the full body bind curse, deciding he would be the test subject.
Okay.
And it could be those, it could be Penny, Barnaby, or Talbert, one of the three, because you have the option to choose one of those three. That's why. You can, you have the choice of bringing specific friends on these key missions. So that's fun.
That seems like a terrible choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. I get that right then. All right.
So Jacob, wearing the crown, had been taking the potion, was able to control their mind, but he was pained with the worst memories due to the crown's curse. Peregrine demanded they continue to take down the ministry and avenge Rusaki's death. A surge of power from Jacob's head hit Barnaby. After Jacob removed it, Peregrine insisted that his younger child would wear the crown. They instead knocked it under a piano, allowing them to escape with Jacob and their friend via apparition.
They got the heck out of Dodge. That's what they did. They said, that's enough of this place.
Screw this.
Yeah.
Done. Teleport. Done. Gone. Like, not down with this. Not at all.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yep.
This...
And that piano is still there. Let's. I mean, this piano is also going to be in the year that we are going to go over next, but that piano is there for a while.
Do you think Dumbledore specifically had it commissioned with the piano in it for a purpose?
Maybe?
Like, what would the reason be? He wanted to go in there and soothe Lupin with some music.
I mean, like you do with Fluffy. That's where I was going to say, is like, how do you soothe a three-headed dog? You play some music.
Maybe a piano would work on a werewolf. Hmm.
Maybe. I mean, they're both dogs, right? I mean, dog, man, dog, something. Yeah,
something.
So next we have the 93-94 school year. So on June 6th, 1994, Harry Potter and Hermione Granger were led into the shack with Sirius Black as a dog, dragged Ron off into the underground passage located underneath the Whomping Willow. While inside the shack, Harry had then found out that who really betrayed his parents, and Scabbers' true identity was revealed.
Mm-hmm.
During the confrontation, Remus Lupin and Severus Snape also enter the shack. Remus entered to assist his friend in exposing the true betrayer, and Snape attempted to capture Sirius.
This place seems to be the place to go to if you have big, unnerving news to unveil.
Yeah, because no one can interrupt you.
No one can. It's,
well,
yeah.
People can interrupt you, like Snape did, but you know, get just a blast of Expelliarmus and get knocked out cold.
Right into the piano, too, I think.
It was into
piano?
A bed.
Oh, he goes into the bed. Okay. Oh, yeah, the piano's by the door. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, and Kay Allen says in the Twitch chat, dog man.
Yes. Dog
man. So, dog man. So, yeah. And then next we have the Battle of Hogwarts. So the Shrieking Shack was later used by Lord Voldemort, and so were the Death Eaters on May 2nd, 1998, as a hideout during the Battle of Hogwarts. Severus Snape was killed by Nagini in this very building, while Harry, Hermione, and Ron watched helplessly from the hiding spot. So this is something that we do get differently in the film of Deathly Hallows Part 2. So Snape is killed by Nagini. Still killed by Nagini, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But in the boathouse.
Yes.
In the film. In the book, it's in the Shrieking Shack.
Which, isn't that the first and only time we actually see the boathouse?
Yes.
In the films, yes. It's interesting that they threw that in there. I mean, they
out of nowhere. It's like, we haven't used the boathouse ever in the films. we can use it for this scene.
Okay. Yeah, it's a weird choice, but okay.
So they watched as Nagini bit into his neck on Voldemort's orders, as he incorrectly believed Snape to be the master of the Elder Wand, poisoning him with her venom. When Voldemort left, they approached dying Snape, who allowed them to take his memories before his death.
And that's where his redemption arc comes in. It's a wild story.
Yep. And Kay Allen also says in chat that you only see the boathouse once. Didn't realize that. Yes, we only see the boathouse once in the films.
You see him use the boats, but yes. You never see him like get out of it into
the
boathouse.
We see the boats once in Sorcerer's Stone, And then we see the boathouse in Deathly Hallows Part 2. So we get it at the very beginning of the series and the very end of the series.
Full circle. They got to wrap it up.
Oh, we have to show this. We haven't shown it yet. So then we get to 2010. So by December 2010, the werewolf Abigail was using the Shrieking Shack to hide whenever she transformed. One night she was followed there by her friend, who was worried that the werewolf had attacked her. When they realized she was a werewolf, they found her asleep in a room in the shack. They decided to leave her there without disturbing her and left her a note.
Hmm.
And, this is also within Harry Potter Magic Awakened, which is set in the 2010s.
Yeah.
Yes, the inside the boathouse in Hogwarts Legacy is lackluster because it's boathouse. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's pretty similar to what they showed in the film. It's just like one or two boats here and there, and that's it. Nothing too crazy.
Well, they only use the boats for the first years, don't they?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So they wouldn't really technically need a whole lot of boats.
No.
In like landing spots and docking for them. So nope. I guess that makes sense. Okay.
So the Shrieking Shack was an abandoned house. The windows and doors boarded up. The rooms and hall were all dirty, covered with dust. The furniture was moth-eaten and broken. There was a chair in the foyer of the shack that had one of its legs ripped off.
Lupin did not like that chair.
Yeah, he used it probably as a chew toy.
Insulted him.
In the foyer, the staircase led to the second room, second floor. In the one of the rooms, there was a magnificent but dusty four-poster bed with a rickety doors, and the room was also where Peter Pettigrew was caught.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it has a piano, yes. At least in the film.
Which, so since we're talking about the Shrieking Shack and Peter Pettigrew and the Marauders map shows the shack, my question, which I think is kind of a funny one, is how did Harry never notice Peter Pettigrew with Ron and the rat hanging out on the Marauders map?
Well, he didn't have
still.
He didn't have Scabbers then yet.
He's had Scabbers forever since the very beginning.
He didn't have the Marauders map until the third film, or third book, till Prince of Azkaban.
Yeah, but he still had Scabbers on him, didn't he? Or was that when Ron...
That's when Ron lost Scabbers. That's why when Harry saw his name for the first time, it's in the corridors of Hogwarts.
And he sees him running.
Yeah. He
yes.
And he's in his rat form. Obviously, he wasn't human yet. But that's why Harry never connected the dots until Sirius revealed it, because it was right before they encountered Sirius is where Ron got Scabbers back.
Interesting. Why did I think that he had it longer? Oh, my mistake. But thank you for clearing that up.
Yep.
Yep.
And then we have behind the scenes for the Shrieking Shack. So Severus Snape had a terrible history with the shack. In 1975, Sirius Black told Severus it went under the Whomping Willow. He would find out what was wrong with Remus. This would have led to his death, as Remus was in his werewolf form. On June 6, 1984, Severus was disarmed and knocked unconscious. And then on May 1998, Severus was ultimately killed in the Shrieking Shack by Nagini under Voldemort's orders.
Hmm.
Yeah. Snape in this building does not get along.
No. It's not the place for him. Or both houses.
Well, obviously. It was not the place for him. That's where he ended. Twice. He almost ended it once, and then he ended it the second chance he was ended.
Yes, he was.
And then in the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Snape instead dies in the boathouse.
Mm.
Yep. Shrieking Shack is shown more as a large two-story house rather than a shack in the film adaptations. The shack's interior in the film adaptations were also very different from the books. The second moment of Chapter 14 on Pottermore, in which the shack first appears, is titled The Shrieking Shack. Given a werewolf's superhuman strength and transformed, Dumbledore likely enchanted the shack's structure to be abnormally durable and possibly added enchantments to make it impossible for Lupin to exit during his transformations. Which, yeah, I believe that. Oh, there's a cat. But yeah, I would wholeheartedly believe that Dumbledore enchanted the freaking heck out of this shack so Lupin could not escape. Because Lupin would be is terribly strong as a werewolf.
Yeah, especially being that close to Hogsmeade, too. You wouldn't want him to get out. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You do not want a werewolf on the prowl in a town full of witches and wizards.
Nope, not at all. That would be a terrible idea.
In the film adaptation, the walls of the shack are shown to slowly move.
Yeah, because they kind of sway around.
Yep. They sway around and all that jazz. It's fun stuff.
Makes it more spoopy.
Yep. That was the whole point. Just, you know, visual effects to make it look creepier.
Yeah, giving the ambiance.
Because Prison of Azkaban is where they start going into the darker turn of the Harry Potter series, where things get a bit more darker and intense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what we have on the Shrieking Shack, which is really cool stuff there.
Yes, it's a very interesting building.
Oh, yeah.
Well, interesting things happen in the interesting building.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. But at this point, let's take a quick mid-break, and we will be right back.
All right.
All right, welcome to the middle of the show, where we talk about everything with the podcast that has nothing to do with the lore of the Wizarding World. Here, we want to thank all of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you do want to support the show, there's a few options you can do. You can go to patreon.com/WizardingWorldLoreCast, where you can join us once a month on the show, get ad-free episodes, and all that fun stuff. You can also support us on Apple and Spotify. We leave a 5-star review on Apple with some words. Read that out loud the next time on the show, as well as a nice Spotify comment. And you can also find us on a few different Discord servers. You can find us on the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net, as well as my own Discord, the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord, where you can find the links for those in the show description below. And you can find us live every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on my Twitch channel at twitch.tv/BenOfTemeria. That was pretty quick.
Come hang out with us.
Yes. Come hang out with us. Our, you know, Wizarding World channel on the robots has been blowing up. A lot of people are getting interactive on there. Even on my Discord channel, the Ben and Friends Podcasting. It's a lot of fun stuff. And, you know, we talk about stuff that's not just with Harry Potter or the Wizarding World. We talk about a bunch of stuff. You can... Yes. Even check out my other shows on both those Discords, the Holocron History, Star Wars Canon vs. Legends, the Final Fantasy Lorecast, and the Witcher Lorecast. And, yeah, besides that, I mean, we did just get a bunch of awesome Star Wars news, so that's good.
Oh.
New trailer dropped for the new Acolyte TV show, which is set to premiere on Disney Plus on June 4th. With two episodes, and it's all set in the High Republic era, which is, it's going to be hundreds of years before Phantom Menace. So it's nothing to do with the Skywalker line. It's going to be completely new stuff. I'm super excited for it, and it's dealing with stuff with the books that are currently being written in the High Republic era.
I will be excited if they bring back pod racing. That's just my little
probably cycle. Not.
I know.
But what you can do is get the Star Wars pod racing game on your Switch or PC or PlayStation.
Is that out finally? Like, I mean, like it's the just, old...
It's,
well, they had the 64 one.
Yeah, that's what they... It's ported over. Star Wars
Racers. Available there?
Is the Star Wars Racers on Switch?
Oh my gosh, I've been waiting so long for it to... I heard rumors that it was coming out like last year. I'm so excited now. Oh, I'm going to be playing the heck out of that. That's so many memories of my childhood.
Yeah, Star Wars Racers on there. Yeah, it's been out for a while. It's been out for over a year.
What? No.
Yeah. Dead serious. I sold it when I was working at GameStop a year ago.
You lied to me. I got false information, but now I'm even more excited.
Yeah, Star Wars Racers is on Switch, which is just pod racing from Phantom Menace.
Yes! Oh, it's so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. I love swoop racing, in my opinion, from KOTOR 1 and 2. I love swoop racing.
Yeah, now you're speaking Greek to me, buddy. I know some Star Wars. I don't know a whole lot, but I got the basics down.
Hey, that's all good. But with that being said, let's get back into our second shop for this episode.
Right.
All right. We're back from the mid-break, and now we are going over Madam Puddifoot's tea shop. Her name's
weird.
I don't
know what we agreed on.
I don't know what we agreed on either anymore. Puddifoot?
So it kind of reminds me of pudding, but Puddifoot. Maybe it's Puddifoot.
Puddifoot. Let's go with Puddifoot.
Let's go with Puddifoot. All right.
So, it was a small tea shop located in this, on a side road off of High Street in Hogsmeade Village. It was owned by Madame Puddifoot and was described by Harry Potter as a haunt of happy couples. The tea shop was very popular among Hogwarts students and served various kinds of drinks.
Mm-hmm. My kind of place.
Sure. I don't know about that. You might change your opinion on it once we go more into this tea shop here.
Challenge accepted.
The decoration was very tacky, frilly, covered with bows, and cramped. The windows steamed up to gaudy tables and chairs were all claimed by teenagers holding hands or kissing over cups of tea and coffee.
All right, so it's decorated by hormones.
Oh, it's going to get worse. A bell over the door announced customers to a tuneful tinkle. The round tables were decorated with lacy napkins and china silver bowls. The cramped up small shop point that Madame Puddifoot was great difficulty in moving in between tables to serve the couples. The tea shop sold tea including Earl Grey and strawberry rose tea infused with hibiscus blossoms and rose petals. It also offered a couples special.
Oh, see, but I really like tea, but I don't know about
I don't know about the shop. Oh, you don't know about, like, specific tea?
Well, no, I do. I really like Earl Grey and, like, strawberry roast tea. And I like all of that kind of stuff, but I don't know if I'd want to be really cramped next to the people while I'm drinking tea.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
So far, that's my biggest complaint.
That's fair. while Cho Chang thought this place was nice and cute, Harry Potter was not fond of the appearance of nor atmosphere, as it reminded him uncomfortably of Dolores Umbridge's office and the sight of couples being intimate with each other made him feel even more uncomfortable. That's the point where I don't like the tea shop, is because it literally reminds me of Umbridge's office, and we all know I don't like that character at all.
It's just PTSD for you. That's all it is. No, I understand.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not getting into it today.
We talked about, you can buy like those cat plates, like a three thing of them that move, and you can hang it on the wall. I think maybe I should get one and put it like right over there and give you a constant reminder of.
I will get. Don't make me break those dishes. No. I have, if anybody listen to that, I have my wand waving at her. I have my wand in my hand and I'm ready to pounce.
I'm just saying, I have some wall space I can hang it up and put it. The three cats just moving around. I mean, it would kind of fit. If I could find ones that look like my cats,
I think that'd be perfect. And then on Valentine's Day, the tea room was decorated with golden shrubs hovering over each of the tables, which occasionally threw the pink confetti over the people sitting below them. This, however, was more irritating than romantic, as the confetti would occasionally land in their beverages.
Yeah, that would be annoying.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. It is very girly and gaudy. It's like you took
absolutely. It's way over the top.
A little eight-year-old girl and like decorate this room. She came up with all the events.
Have a pinata over everybody's head instead of freaking candy. Here's a bunch of confetti. Oh, it got in your tea. Sorry, not sorry.
This is an 8-year old's. Tea dream, like tea party dream. That's exactly what the shop is. Yes.
So getting into the history. Sometime before the 1980s, this was where Elphinstone Urquhart first proposed to Minerva McGonagall while he was on holiday in Scotland. McGonagall, surprised and embarrassed, turned him down as she still had feelings for Dougal MacGregor.
Ooh. All right. I'm kind of excited about getting a little bit of a backstory with Minerva. Didn't know any of that. I like that.
Right. During the 1987-1998 school year, Jacob Sibley, Charles Weasley, and Nymphadora Tonks found this location to set it as a good place for a date for the former. Jacob Sibley and their crush went on a date here. And this is where they introduced into Hogwarts mystery, hey, you can date your so many different, all these different friends. You can get a real romance points or whatnot and go on dates and all that fun stuff.
Hmm.
And then sometime in 1995, Cedric Diggory and Cho Chang came to Madame Puddifoot's on a date, which we did get referenced in Order of the Phoenix. No, yeah, Order of the Phoenix.
Yes.
On Valentine's Day in 1996, Harry Potter and Cho Chang had a cup of coffee here and sat by Rogers Davis and his girlfriend. Their date, however, turned out nightmarishly wrong. Harry already felt highly uncomfortable the moment he set eyes on the cafe's insides, as the decors reminded him of Umbridge's office, and the intimate couples all around them made him even more awkward. Oh boy, and just wait, it gets worse.
I'm so excited.
It only got worse from when Cho started talking about Cedric, which made her cry, and when Harry mentioned in a way that he led to misunderstandings, Hermione Granger, she became jealous and left dramatically, to the astonishment of the whole tea room, who stopped to watch them. Harry swiftly paid for the coffee and chased after her, but she had already disappeared from the street. The experience left Harry in a negative impression on the place and is referred to it as a stupid tea shop while reliving this disaster with Hermione.
Yeah. It's also a nice little reminder that you're going to have dates that just kind of go really bad.
Yeah.
Especially if you take them to a tea shop that is decorated by an 8-year-old.
Yeah. And I agree with Kay Allen in the Twitch chat. He says that glad they didn't have romance in Hogwarts Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wonder
if they'll add in a second one.
I can see them adding it at some point because they are working on a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because Hogwarts Legacy was a huge hit and it was highly, highly profitable.
Yes.
And very critically acclaimed. It was actually got best game of 2023.
Good.
Not as a game of the year, but it got best game of 2023 as in profit-wise. It beat out Call of Duty, which doesn't surprise me anymore because Call of Duty has kind of gone downhill, but that's just my opinion.
They're all pretty close to the same thing. I might catch flack on that, but...
How about if in a date you don't bring up someone you went on a date prior with who's now dead? And then also to the guy who saw his death, by the way. And then it was also Harry's fault for mentioning Hermione. But the problem is Cho also straight up misunderstood her completely.
That's like second date topic.
Yeah. They both were in the wrong.
Correct. Yes. It was just bad all around.
Yeah. So when Harry, Ron Weasley, and Hermione did not meet Ginny Weasley during one of their Hogsmeade weekend trips, they wondered if they could cozily closeted at Madame Puddifoot's, which they thought would be a haunt of happy couples, presumably due to the disastrous date with Cho, with Dean Thomas. just no.
Jealousy.
Just no. And then in December of 2010, a Hogwarts student visited the tea shop for the first time. They suggested it would be easier to serve customers if they cleared the clutter in there. However, Madame Puddifoot told them it was deliberately staged that way to bring people together. They thought it was a good way to break the ice, and she replied that she would go to any length to ensure the customers were happy. And that is part of Magic Awaken, the mobile game. That clutter does not bring people together. I am sorry, Madam.
You're supposed to bring the couples together, not multiple couples together.
Right.
I mean, they're there for first, second dates kind of a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then one night, a thief tried to break into the tea shop and broke a window. While she was cleaning up the glass, Madame Putterfoot told the student she found a pungent tuft of fur among the pieces. Later, Madame Putterfoot greeted the student and Cassandra Vole while they were working on together in divination homework. She offered them a couple special, but Cassandra told her they weren't on a date. After ordering two cups of Earl Grey tea, and the students worked together on Tessomancy.
Yes, which Tessomancy is the art of reading tea leaves to predict the events of the future. It's where the Grimm came from,
yep.
From Harry's
and,
tea.
Yep, we see that in the film and the book of Prisoner of Azkaban, mm-hmm. which I didn't realize until doing now going over these notes that I connected the Shrink and Shack to the Madame Putterfoot with Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah,
was totally it was totally by accident. So
nice little quinkadink. Yeah,
but yeah. And that is again also in Magic Awakened. And then during the calamity, volunteer members of the Statue of Secrecy Task Force were able to visit Madame Putterfoot's through the usage of portkeys and to order Rexports.
The Rexport. Let's see.
And the calamities during the Wizards Unite mobile game that is no longer in service because it did that bad.
Because
It was trying to compete with Pokemon Go. And that's something you do not do. Pokemon Go and Niantic was well ahead of its time for mobile AR games. And still, to this day, dominates it because I still play it to this day.
Oh, yeah. I know people who still play it to this day, too.
I mean, it's the best way to get a lot of Pokemon. You can transfer them to your Pokemon home, which you can then transfer to your main games. It's the best way to get legendaries and the best way for mythicals, which you normally can't do without outside of a special event code.
And it's a good way to go for walks.
And it's also a good way for walks. Yeah, it's good exercise.
Mm-hmm. It's good exercise.
They added a lot to that game.
Yeah, I remember playing it when it first came out. It was still a lot of fun.
It's more fun now because they have the updated Pokédex. Mm-hmm. All the way up to the newer games, surprisingly. Took them 2 years to get Gen 2 Pokemon in that game. And now, after not even 7 years, or maybe it's been, oh no, it's been about a decade, I would imagine, they now have all the way to Scarlet and Violet.
Huh. I wonder if they just kind of had to figure it out at first.
They did, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, they did it right, though.
Absolutely. But anyway, Rexport is
an invisible magical creature which floated into a person's ear, making their brains become unfocused and confused. Luna talked about them.
Oh yeah, that's right. I think we talked about them before.
Yeah, we did mention them before. I just forgot the name.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have some behind the scenes for the tea shop. So it is plausible that the ridiculously frilly decorations and napkins in the foggy windows were merely addition decorations for Valentine's Day, and that the tea shop usually was not so frilly. Though considering the overly intimate atmosphere, it was also possible that only the shrubs were the Valentine's Day exception.
Maybe.
And then a Madame Putterfoot's storefront was added to Hogsmeade in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter as a result of the Diagon Alley expansion. The storefront used to house Weiser's wizarding equipment, which was moved to Diagon Alley. Oh boy, so that means I get to experience this when I go and take my Universal trip later this year?
That is definitely a place I need pictures of.
Crap.
You're going.
Darn it. I was hoping they didn't have this in freaking Hogsmeade. And that's something that I really like what they did with the Wizarding World is when they added the expansion for Diagon Alley, all the shops that were in the original Wizarding World, because it was like a mix of Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade, they literally took, hey, we're going to take all the Diagon Alley shops out of the original space. They're going to put them in the Diagon Alley expansion space, and then everything now that was the original park is now Hogsmeade, and now we're adding even more stuff in the spaces that they originally had.
I like that. They're definitely figuring it out.
I'm curious if there's two. I don't know. I haven't been there since 2013, so I haven't been there Haven't been there with the Diagon Alley expansion or anything like that. So I'm curious, is there two shops of Ollivander's or is it just the one in Diagon Alley now?
I would think they would just keep the one.
That's what I'm assuming, but they could have two. You never know. They could have two. I mean, there's an Ollivander's branch in Hogwarts Legacy.
This is very true.
So who knows? I don't know.
Although I'm going to bet on just one.
I'm betting on just one as well. But yeah. I could see them doing two just to keep the lines down.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, just to make it
because since the wands are all fully interactable, which my wand is fully interactable with the park that I have, and it is my wand from my quiz. So it's Laurel with a phoenix feather. That's what it is. I don't think of the wood. It's Laurel wood with a phoenix core.
Nice. Very pretty. I need to get mine. Any work on that?
I literally just bought mine from the Universal website because I wanted to be prepared before I go to the park.
Good thinking.
And I have my robes, too. I have my robes in my closet and everything. So, I mean, I'm ready to go full on decked out in robes and everything when I go.
When is it that you're going again?
I am going in October, which is super exciting because...
Oh, yeah, the October one.
When in October through September and October of the Wizarding World, they do their Halloween event. And during the Halloween event, Death Eaters roam around the park, which is super exciting. And you can have duels with them, which is awesome. Exciting.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I have seen couples get proposed. I saw one video of a couple getting they got engaged during this event, I think last year. And they literally, the Death Eaters did the Unbreakable Vow with them. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever.
That is so cool. I like that very much.
I just love how interactable the parks are. And now Universal is a lot more immersive with the park. I will say, though, like than Disney. But Disney is more immersive with specifically Star Wars. So Galaxy's Edge is very immersive. All the cast members will interact with you with the specific... signs and sayings that you can like you there's specific like saying bright suns is good morning at Galaxy's Edge. Saying rising moons is good night. They will respond to you in kind with those phrases and all that, which is really cool. And like they're always in character. Stormtroopers will interact with you fully. When I went to Disney last year, I was probably called out by stormtroopers at least 5 times. I was called out probably about 3 times. My friend with me was probably called out by 2 because he was wearing an Ahsoka hat, and the stormtroopers like, "What the heck? What are you wearing this for?" He's like, "Oh, it's a disguise." Like, "No, that's not right." And then I also had myself in binders, which are handcuffs essentially, and my friend took me to the stormtroopers and looked at me, looked up, and it was like just shaking their head. I was like, "No,
no."
And turned around. It's great. Oh my god! If you haven't experienced Galaxy's Edge yet, I highly, highly recommend Galaxy's Edge because if you're a Star Wars fan, you are going to love it. They actually just did introduce new droids at a tech demo. I think it was yesterday. Or a couple days ago, or past this week. And they're using NVIDIA AI chips in them to where they actually learn and are walking on their own. And they're little droids.
Cool and scary at the same time.
It's little box droids. They're so adorable, though. It's great. But anyway, this is Wizarding World, not Star Wars. That you can go listen to my Star Wars stuff on my Holocron History stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's what we have on Madame Puddifoot's tea shop in the Shrieking Shack. Definitely super excited now that apparently Madame Puddifoot's tea shop is at Wizarding World, so I get to experience that myself. So, yeah, super exciting. They don't have the Shrieking Shack, though, because you don't want to go there.
No. I mean, that would be cool for even for, like, the October.
It'd be cool, but where are they going to put it? That's
I mean, even if it was just in the distance and it just shrieked.
Oh, it was just, like, there?
Yeah. You could interact with it. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. But do you have anything else to add to this week's episode?
Just my Quisiting World.
Oh, Quisiting World. That's right.
There we go.
Why I keep forgetting about that?
Maybe because I'm stumping you and I got hard ones.
Right? I know. I can't remember what this question was last week.
Oh, okay. Well, the question last week was when Hagrid finally finds Harry on his 11th right. birthday, he brings him a birthday cake, though he might have sat on it a bit. But how many candles are on the cake? So I got a couple answers on it. The Devil and Hunte Toastar both said 11, which you would think it would be 11, but there's actually zero. And Kay Allen got it right. He was right on that one. There weren't any candles on the cake at all. It's just a little smushed. In the movie, it is it's shown to be spelled inappropriately, like happy is H-A-P-E-E, which I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of because.
Yeah, that's fair. No, he's not. But, he's not stupid.
No. So, but yeah, there aren't any candles on that one. It was kind of a little bit of a trick question there. But this week, I don't think this one's as hard. I'll give you guys an easy one since I've been going kind of hard on you there for a little bit. But during
the Dumbledore one, like no one got that right.
It's like, I ruin everyone's week with that one.
What are you talking about? What did he, like? I'm thinking of what he said in the film, not in the book. And I was like, he says something in the book.
He does. Yeah. No. And there's a bunch of theories about it too. Apparently, about what he could have actually meant, like why he chose those words.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. But the question for this week is during the seventh film, the Hogwarts Express is stopped and searched by Snatchers and Death Eaters. Which student confronts them and calls them losers?
Oh, I know this one.
So in the seventh film, at the Hogwarts Express, when it stopped and searched by Snatchers and Death Eaters, which student confronts them and calls them losers? So shoot me a message in Discord, respond on Spotify, let me know what you think it is, and we'll go from there. But that is this week's.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. Everyone, thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. And remember, the wand chooses the witch or wizard. Thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. You can find us on the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net. You can find us on the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord. You can also find us on Twitter at WWLorecast and even email us at wizardingworldlorecast@gmail.com.